All right. So Genesis chapter 11, we're going to finish it out tonight. And hopefully bring a lot of this to a close. Now, you're going to hear a lot of repeating tonight, but it's so important for us to get a grasp of this. And so we're going to continue to finish out the genealogy of Shem. If you remember, chapter 10 gave us a lineage, the 70 nations, basically how the world was repopulated after the flood. And then 11 gives us that event. Those first nine views us the Tower of Babel, which caused the separation. And then it goes right back into the line of Shem. So it's really important that what the Bible is doing is it's narrowing it down to the preservation of a promised line. That's so important. There's a little bit of compression there after Babel, where you're going to see that the lifespans now start to shorten and the dispersion is a reality. So we have the transition of nations from one man, Adam, all the way through now what is we're going to see basically how the world is mainly populated today. There's obviously more than 70 nations, but they all come from the 70 core. So we have this contrast, this Babylonian system. And if you remember from last week, what was the cry? We want to make a name for ourselves. And we looked that up in the Hebrew, and that word was Shem, which is interesting because you're like, wait a second, isn't that one of Noah's descendants? Remember, too, that when they named their children back then, and especially when you're looking at it through the Bible, those names carry identity. It's not just, I think we're going to name him Jim because I had an Uncle Jim, and we're just going to keep the name in the family. No, their names carried weight. They carried an identity. And that's why we later on in Revelation, you see the Antichrist and the mark of the beast. It's really the Shem of the Antichrist. You are aligning with the identity of the Antichrist. And so God is now going to use this name, this Shem, as his covenant line. So he can usher in the Messiah, which if you are saved, you have the Shem of Jesus because you identify with him. All this is really very interesting. Today we're also going to see where Terah, who is Noah or Abraham's parents, have partial obedience. And then Abraham's future testing ground is what we're going to close with today. How does this section fit in? This section fits in, like I talked about, Genesis chapter 10, the spread of the nations, verses 1 through 9, the false Shem system, false name system. And then tonight, we're going to go 10 through 31, which says the true Shem, the true name, the line that's preserved, and we're going to go all the way to Abram. This is the pivot from global rebellion into personal covenant. And there's so many parallels here. There's so many spiritual lines here that, you know, we also are called out of Babel. We're called out of the global rebellion. And just like in the Bible, in the end times, there's going to be a narrowing of those who carry the true Shem of Jesus. So we have creation, which leads to nations, which leads to one line, to one man, who will become one nation, to one Messiah. All right, one more time on this. You're going to get tired of me saying this, but this is huge. Shem, it means name. So Babel showed us what happens when humanity unite around a false identity. They build structure, control, and a name for themselves. Now, God's going to shift the focus. He's going to narrow it down. Instead of building a name, God preserves a line to carry his name forward. This is very quiet. And often in our podcast today, we talked about it. God speaks in those still small voices. You know, a lot of times when God is working in our lives, it's very quiet. It's very subtle. We want to see the big grandiose things. We want to see the big parting of the sea. We want to see the resurrection of the dead. We want to see the blind see again and the lame jump up and walk. We want to see all that. But often, especially as we're seeing in John, as we're going through John on Sundays, it's much quieter than that. Super quiet. And if it's quiet, what does that require us to do? To listen. Yeah. And here's why. God doesn't compete with the systems of man. God doesn't compete with them. He outworks them through His promise. So the line of Shem is this. Obviously Noah, then Shem, Arphaxad, Salah, Eber, Peleg, Reu, Serug, Nahor, Terah, and Abram, which would later become Abraham. All right, so I've made up this cool little timeline. It took me about 20 times to tell ChatGPT to get it right, because it didn't, but it finally got close. So here we have Shem. I want you to realize this. Shem lived 600 years, okay? When he was 100, he had Arphaxad. Then, when he was born at 35, Salah was born. When he was 30, Eber was born. When he was 34, Peleg was born. You can get that whole thing. But look at this. We start to see a downward trend, right? 600, 500, 500, 600. We'll explain that in a second. 400, 400, 400, 500, 500. But there's a narrowing. You see, we're starting to see the results of the Garden of Eden where death is going to enter in, and we're starting to see the narrowing. But I find this interesting. Take a look at this. First of all, here's Shem. And if we go straight down, look at that. They coexisted. Abram lived when Shem was there. Could it be that Abram had conversations with a firsthand witness of the flood? Absolutely. Absolutely. And then when Eber comes into play, look at that. Abram was also alive when Eber was there. So, Shem, Genesis chapter 10, or chapter 11, 10 through 11. Let's pick it up there. This is the genealogy of Shem. Shem was 100 years old, and he begot Arphaxad 2 years after the flood. So that's kind of cool, right? So 2 years after the flood, you can go back to that slide for me, Craig. 2 years after the flood, right, he was born. Okay? So that tells us that he lived, you know, close to 100 years old pre-flood. Interesting too. All right. Verse 11, and he begot Arphaxad. Shem lived 500 years and begot sons and daughters. So, Shem, again, name, reputation, identity, authority, that's what the name was, okay? And so you've got the go into the Hebrew, there's the she-e, and then the m, the nun, okay? All right, not the nun, but the mem. So remember, when we get into these genealogies, whether it's in Genesis or Leviticus or even in the Gospels, right? It's not just talking about who begot who. Nope. It's tracking a covenant movement, not just biology. There's a whole point to the lineage. And when we race through the lineage, in fact, a lot of people are like, yeah, I get to that and I just skip it. You're missing a lot. Hopefully now you're starting to see the value of why it's there. I mean, God's not just putting it there just so we know. Not just that. He's putting it there so that we know and we understand and we can comprehend His plan. After the flood, God does not rebuild or start over. After the Tower of Babel, He does not rebuild or start over. He continues with His plan, which is His line. Man builds systems to secure identity, but God builds people to carry His identity. Did you catch that? That is huge, right? Man builds systems to secure identity, but God builds people to carry his identity. That is huge. You see, a lot of times you look at a building, and the building and the way it's structured, maybe the colors of the building, you go, oh, that's a Target. Or that's the Golden Arches. I don't even have to tell you what that one is, right? And it's like you can identify it through the building. God, his main source is not a temple, a church. It's not a cross. It's not any of these things. He carries the identity through the people. We are the body. We are the representatives. And this is why it's really important that we take a look at our lives and being, hey, are we walking worthy of that? That's big. So, Hebrew Shem means name, reputation, and authority. So, here's the pattern. And you can see if this is in your life or not. But when things fall apart, what do? You try to build it back in your own strength. I mean, that was a whole campaign, wasn't it? Make something great again? We're always trying to build back better. I think that was another campaign slogan. We always try to build things in our own strength. But the point is this, God doesn't rush to fix systems. He wants to redirect you back to your true identity made in his image. He's trying to break you back into his identity. That hidden reality is that God at work, he never stops. He didn't stop at Babel. He doesn't stop with us. But sometimes he changes focus. All right, verses 12 through 17. Aphax lived 35 years and begot Selah. After he begot Selah, Arphaxad lived 403 years and begot sons and daughters. Selah lived 30 years and begot Eber. After he begot Eber, Selah lived 403 years and he begot sons and daughters. Eber lived 34 years and begot Peleg. After he begot Peleg, Eber lived 430 years, and he begot sons and daughters. Okay, so here we get back to that word, Eber. Okay, and understand that the bet in Hebrew, it looks like this, basically. If it doesn't have a ball in the box, it's V for vacant. Did you learn that from my thing? Oh, wow. So, now, the ancient Hebrew didn't have dots in there, but they would understand, how would they know the difference between the B or the V? They would just know it because of the context of the name, okay? But modern Hebrew would put a ball in that box. Where's my little pointer? Right there, you see, there's the bet. There would be a dot right there if you were to say Eber. So, the pronunciation is Eber. This is where we get the name Hebrew come from. A lot of times we think, oh, you're Hebrew is because you're Jewish or whatever. You're Hebrew because you are of the line of Eber. And it means to cross over or to pass through. Interesting again. Now we're getting some more context to the names. So the Hebrew doesn't just mean the ethnic. We'll just go with that. It really means the one who crossed over. The one who crossed over fits with Eber, the Hebrew line, and Abram's line. Because what does it tell us a picture of? Separation, passage, and the covenant of Abram. So that's where it all fits. It's the setting apart. All right, so Hebrew is commonly linked to this thought. A people marked by crossing over, passing through, and being called out. So you could say, again, not through biology or not through our ethnics, but you could say we too are Hebrew in the fact that we have been what? Called out. That doesn't make us have to obey the law or anything like that. Don't go there with that. I'm just talking about the principle. Okay, so Eber, you can sum it up this way, crossing over from one realm to another, leaving one identity for another, coming out from the world's system, moving by faith into what God has promised. All four of those check the box as for the Christian, yes? Yeah, because we can check all four of those boxes as well. But look at the pattern. Babel, man building what? Upward. Abram, man being called outward. Babel, false unity. Abram, covenant separation. Babel, make a name for ourselves. Abram is going to give Abram his name, Abraham. Babel, rebellion into. Abram, disobedience or obedience into the promise. So, the line of Eber becomes the line of crossing over. Out of the world's rebellion, out of false identity, and ultimately in Christ's out of death into life. So, Eber and Abraham overlapped by 239 years. 239 years they coexisted. They could definitely be having a lot of conversations at this time. In fact, Eber outlives Abram by 64 years. So Abram dies, and he's still alive for 64 years. Now, check this out, because we time the Tower of Babel around what we would call the AD 1757 or 1800 AD. Okay, understand there was a change there between the what we would call BC and the AM, actually, but it's the we call it the AD. If you go back to just the basic BC count, right, it would be somewhere around 2247 to 2200 BC. The Jewish historians calculate the age of the earth. Earth began at 4004 BC. And you do that by taking the known dates that we have and working backwards. Now, some of the Jews, there's a different thought where there's about a 217-year gap in between the two thinkings. And the problem is when the children of Israel were taken into Babylon, there's a compression of, hey, 70 years, or you guys were there much longer. And they argue between those two dates, and that's why there is a overlapping. In fact, right now the Hebrew calendar is, I think, 5781 or something like that, to compensate for those 217 years. We'll get into that a little bit later. I'm shooting from the hip on that. So, but here's where the tower would have happened. Now, look who's all alive already at the tower. Okay? So we come to this conclusion because of Peleg. What does his name mean? His name means to be divided. And we talked about that when we were in chapter 10. But in the year, we don't know when it happened. Did it happen at his birth? Did it happen, you know, after he was old, a little older? So that's why there's a difference there of about 30 or so years, because they don't know exactly when it happened. Did it happen at his birth, or did it happen within his first 30 years of life? Okay? So, the meaning of 10 in Hebrew. We're going to go on one of a few field trips tonight. Here's one. The meaning of 10 in Hebrew. Now, this may be a lot of information for you, but this is why we put it on school with a study outline, so you can go back and be like, I didn't quite get that when I was sitting in church listening to it live, but you can go back and watch the video again, or even look at the questions, because the questions in the school study guide will explain it all to you, so you can go back and have that reference, okay? So, 10 in Hebrew means completeness or the fullness of order. So, this is what's also amazing about Hebrew. Each letter is assigned a number, which also represents something. Okay? We know the number 7 to be what? Completeness. We know the number 3. We know all these numbers. So, that's kind of the same lines that we're thinking here. So, 10 is completeness, fullness of order. All right? It's tied to the letter Yod. And it's that little tiny thing, not that's the word, it's that little tiny thing right over there, okay? And it looks like, basically looks like, you know, a little puppet show, okay? In fact, it's one of the smallest, the yod and the tittle. The yot, which was yod, and the tittle. So not one yod or tittle. The tittle is the little flare on the yod that helps distinguish, not on the yod only, but between the bet and the kaf, which tells it it is between those two letters. There's a little flare on the writing, and that's called the tittle. All right. So it is the smallest letter, yet it represents a point of origin, the hand, puppet show, hand of God, and the idea that something has reached a completed unit. So when you see the number 10, it often means a full cycle completed according to God's order. We have divine order, we have law, and we have structure. So as we think of this number 10 now, based on what I just said, we know what? The 10 commandments, the 10 plagues of Egypt. They were a complete judgment cycle. The 10 generations between Adam and Noah. Noah was 10 generations from Adam. Complete an era of humanity before what happened with Noah? The flood. Then guess what? It's a coinkydink. You have another 10 generations from Noah to Abraham, which completes the area before the covenant. Because what does Abraham represent? The covenant. So see the two groupings of 10? Actually, right there, there's four groupings of 10. So we see this pattern. And this is what I can't stress enough to you guys. Hebrew prophecy is pattern, 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 pattern. The Greek philosophy of prophecy is foretell prediction. But that's not the Hebrew mindset. All right? So God allowed a full measure of time and accountability before he acted. Now, we go to another number, and that is the number 70. Where do we see that before? The 70 nations. It's a fullness, but on a larger scale. Anybody else know of another 70? Okay. What about the elders and the helpers to Moses? Yep. Okay. So it's a fullness on a larger scale, a complete period or judgment or restoration. So we have the 70 elders of Egypt. We have the 70 nations in Genesis chapter 10. How long were the children of Israel in Babylon? 70 years. Okay. And what else do we have in Daniel when he talks about the history of the world? 70 weeks. And how many weeks have passed? 69. There's one more week that we have to have, and it is the last week, which is the 7 years, and Revelation tells us that that final week of Daniel is the 7-year tribulation. Why is it in consecutive order? Because there's a little pause in there for this mystery called the church. So if 10 is a complete unit, and 70 looks like the complete fullness worked out in history among people, nations, and kingdoms. If we take 7 times 70, I think Rady mentioned that, we get 490. That's another coinkydink number. Have you ever heard of 490 before? Yeah, it's really important because 7 times 70 means the fullness of a cycle or a historical cycle. It means spiritual completeness. The number 7 is divine, you know, the completion, the covenant completion is the number 7. So 490 becomes a divinely completed full measure of time for God's purpose to be finished. And when you track out through the Old Testament, you'll see chunks of 490, 490, 490, and you especially see it in Daniel. The pattern's going to build like this. 10 generations, a full cycle before God intervenes. What do we have so far? Adam to Noah, Noah to Abram. The full cycle before judgment, the full cycle before the covenant. 70, fullness expanded into nations and kingdoms. The nations spread, empires rise, judgment and restoration cycles now unfold. So 490 is a, this is a fun word, a prophetic superstructure. Superstructure of completion. It's not just genealogy. It's not just history. It's how God measures redemptive countdowns. So the pattern seems to move from a family line to a nation to a promised Messiah. Okay, you ready? 490? Or this means, we'll bring it all this way, Adam to Noah ends judgment. Noah to Abraham ends in a calling, an Ever, a Shem, to the covenant to Abram. And then Daniel points 490 years and the Messiah comes. This is how we know the date Jesus came and died on the cross, because of the 490. So it shows God in his redemptive program on his measured clock. Did you know there's also a Sabbath structure built within this? Okay, so seven, what do we have? 7 days. Seventh day he rested. 7 years. The seventh year is a Sabbath. 7 times 7 years to Jubilee. That's the 49. 70 times 7, the 490 is the bigger prophetic pattern. So 490 isn't just math, it fits the whole Bible structure of when God is ordering time in sacred cycles. Pretty cool, huh? And guess what? You see all that within chapter 11. That's why he gives the dates or the ages. All right, so Peleg, you remember him, means division. And it directly ties to Babel. So the nations divided during his time. Genealogy reflects spiritual and physical fragmentation, the Tower of Babel. And since Peleg means division, it's not an accident. It's a timestamp of what Babel produced. So God inspired the father and the mother. Wow, they're going through the baby name book, the baby book scrolls of names. And all of a sudden he goes, let's call him Peleg. Division? Yeah. Okay. Divinely inspired. But here's the thing I want you to recognize, right? How do we apply this today? Because we see this everywhere today. Isn't there so much division? I mean, if you don't agree with me politically, we're instant enemies. Really? It's really bad. I mean, most of us in this room are like, you know, if somebody comes up to us and tells us they don't agree with our political views, we're like, okay, it's what makes America great. You can do whatever you want. But most people today, they don't agree, and they want to hurt you. And they'll go online and post all this stuff and do everything they can. It's like, really? Is it that big of a deal? Because, you know, we know people recovering from brain surgery, don't we? I kind of think that's a bigger deal. We got people that, you know, can't feed their families. We got people that, you know, are physically really hurting. We got people that don't know the Lord. And we're going to worry about that? There's bigger issues on the table, friends. There is. But this is what we see today. Nations divided, families divided, churches divided. Holy cow, there's so many church divisions. I was just in town the other day, and there's a church that's been there, and all of a sudden it's a new name again. I was like, what happened to the other one? I don't know. It's not because God is fracturing things. It's because man is trying to unify himself and a group of people unto himself apart from God. And that's why we always use that example of God is the center axle and everything on the wheel rotates around him. Okay? So, what do we do? Why everything is dividing around us? Remember this, God still has a line that is continuing. He still has promises that he has made, and they will be kept. So Avram, let's go to verses 24 through 26. I think we skipped a bunch, but that's okay. 24 says, Nahor lived 29 years and begot Terah. After he begot Terah, Noah lived 119 years and begot sons and daughters. Now Terah lived 70 years and begot Abram, Noah, and Haran. Okay, so Abram, we're going to pause there because he's the important guy. And again, there's no dot in there, so you might pronounce it Avram. And it means exalted father. Could you imagine naming your kid exalted father? That kid better exalt me as its father. But here we have the introduction of Abram, and we have a big shift in the story of Genesis. If you've been tracking along so far, we finally arrived to Abram. I want you to know this too, because when we look at the genealogy, it's going to bring it down to this one person, from a nation to a one chosen man, to build a nation, to refocus back in on one chosen man. But here's the difference between that Jesus and Abram. Abram wasn't perfect. In fact, he is not doing very well at the beginning. And we see he makes mistakes along the way. So God doesn't start with a perfect man. He starts with a chosen man. There's no resume given. There's no credentials. God just called and gave a promise to this man. Now you might be saying, well, why? We'll look at that here in a moment. But first, Deuteronomy 7, it says, God chooses Israel not because they're great, but because of his love and his purpose. That should bring you a lot of comfort right now. Because if you're like me, you're not perfect. And it gives us hope because God still loves you. He still chooses you. He still died for you. We're so busy about trying to be perfect. I've had so many conversations with people that have said, God will never choose me because I've done so many bad things. And the Bible doesn't teach that at all. The Bible actually teaches the opposite. I mean, nobody's perfect. Romans 9 says God's purposes stands by his choosing, not by human effort. That should bring comfort to you too. Because we're not perfect. And I don't think God expects us to be perfect. I mean, we're told in Romans that there's no righteous one. There's no not one. Anyone who says they have no sin, he lies. That doesn't mean we go into that ditch of whatever, free, let's just go for it. We got the grace of God. That doesn't mean that either. We still pursue righteousness. We still pursue holiness. But because of our pursuit, that doesn't make or break us getting into heaven. We get into heaven because God so loved the world that he sent his only begotten Son for you. And if you would believe and receive him, you will have everlasting life. So let's look at some reasons that God chose Abraham. He chose because he just decided to. He wanted to start a covenant line of grace. And he knew that Abram would respond in faith. Abram's now defining trait is that of faith. And you read through it, there's a lot of things he's called to do that take huge faith. And guess what? He trusted God before he understood. God said, get up, let's go. Where are we going? I didn't give you that information. I said, let's go. Okay. Take your only son up on the hill. We're going to offer him as a sacrifice. But God, how is that going to work? I thought you were going to give me this promise through him, and now you're going to kill him? He just said, what? Okay. See, guys, we often don't trust God because we don't understand. We don't have comprehension. When you say to somebody, Jesus died for you, and if you receive him, you're saved, and they go, okay, that is faith. When you say that same message to somebody else, and they go, well, how does that work? That's not faith. That's expecting understanding before they believe. In reality, there's a lot of things in this world that we trust that we can't fully explain. Can you fully explain gravity? We understand it. We see it at work. But can you really understand it? Can you really understand the wind? And why, when you're sitting around the campfire, it blows the smoke right in your face? And then you move and it follows you? Can you understand electricity? I'm an electrician, so, you know, it's still classified as a theory. We know it works. We don't know how it works. Can you fully explain how an airplane flies and stays up there? Dave may think he can, but he doesn't fully understand it. He may get some ideas about it. He may have a general concept of how it works. But we take those same principles and we apply it to other things and they don't cross over. So I guess I don't really understand. Can you guys explain and fully understand why every morning the sun comes up? No. Can't fully comprehend it. So my point is this. We can't carry that to God, folks. There are some things that we cannot fully understand. We are the creation. And there's no way that you can fully comprehend the Creator. Doesn't work that way. He was also detachable, meaning God can move him. God said, let's go. He said, okay. God said, let me shape you a little bit. He said, okay. And he said, I'm going to build something new through you. He says, all right. So he was detachable. Abram becomes a model of walking with God. And that's what this is all about. Not just following rules, but having that relationship with God. So God chose Abraham not because he was the best. Not because he would, you know, be a mighty man and do marvelous things. No. He chose Abram because Abram would believe him. He would follow him. He would carry the promise. So, God chose Abram so that he could show what he can do through someone who simply believes in him. That is huge. Don't miss what I just said. God chose Abram because God could use him to show the world what he, God, could do through a willing person who trusted God. So do you want to be chosen by God? Well, remember this. You don't develop those traits to be chosen. You respond with these traits because God is calling. So what, again, one more time, I'm going to bring this home for you guys. What Abraham shows and what we are to follow or imitate. Faith before understanding. Hebrews 11:8. He went not knowing. For us, when God says move, when he says speak, we get up and we go. we follow, even if the picture isn't clear. For us, we are to imitate a willingness to leave what is familiar. Genesis 12, leave your country, your people, your father's house. Leave them. So for us, we got to let go of what anchors us into our comforts, into our identity, and into what we can control. We are to trust in God's promise. Genesis 15, 6, believed God. He believed God. So we trust in what God said more than what we can see. A life of building altars. Now we don't go around building altars, but it basically means a life of worship. Abraham repeatedly built altars. We'll see that through Genesis 12 all the way through 13. So again, we don't build altars, but we do return to worship God. And we have dependence on God. And we repeat this over and over and over again. In your prayers, how often are your prayers a Lord provide for me versus a Lord thank you for what you have given me? It's like I always say, we treat God as our easy button, our OnStar, our 911 call. And yes, He does. He does save us in those emergency situations. Absolutely. Please don't mishear me in that. But we're often out of balance with our prayer life with the me, 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 instead of saying, oh God, you're awesome. Thank you for giving me what I have. No, we're like, Lord, I need a better car. Lord, thank you for this car that starts sometimes. I need more money. I need a better job. Thank you for the job you have given me. Thank you for the money you have provided. Growth, not perfection. Guys, we have this problem. I have this problem. That you learn something and 5 minutes later you are thinking you should be perfect at it. No, we're going to fall down. We're going to fail. We're going to fail. In fact, if we don't fail, then we can't grow anymore. So we learn to embrace the failure so that we can grow. I mean, Abram has lots of failures. We're going to read one as we get into chapter 12 where he's going to go to Egypt and lie to Pharaoh. It's my sister. It's not my wife. He's going to lie when it comes to Hagar. But he keeps going. He keeps going. So God uses people who keep going. He doesn't use people who never stumble. Because that's just not a fact. And surrender when it matters most. Genesis 22, he was willing to offer Isaac. So, nothing is off limits to God. Have you ever said to God, God, you can have it all, but leave this one little thing for me? I have. Lord, move me, but I really don't want to go there. Or I really don't want to leave this behind. Lord, you know my heart. And God said, yeah, I know your heart. You don't want to leave. Verses 27 through 31. This is the genealogy of Terah. Terah begot Abram, Nahor, and Haran. And Haran begot Lot. Oh, sound familiar? So this would be Abram's nephew. And Haran died before his father, Terah, in his native land, in Ur of the Chaldeans. Then Abram and Noah took wives, and the name of Abram's wife was Sarai, and the name of Nahor's wife was Milcah, the daughter of Haran, the father of Milcah, and the father of Iscah. But Sarah was barren. She had no children. And Terah took his son Abram and his grandson Lot and the son of Haran and his daughter-in-law Sarai and his son's Abram's wife, and they went out with them from Ur of the Chaldeans to go to the land of Canaan, and they came to Haran and dwelt there. So the days of Terah were 205, and Terah died in Haran. So Ur, it means flame, fire, and very possibly named after a pagan worship. So it was a big, big pagan city. So again, what do we see? Abram doesn't come from a church family. He comes from a very wicked environment. He came out of Ur, a place tied to false worship, system religion, culture idolatry, a Babylon. And that should immediately break the idea that God only calls people with clean backgrounds. Doesn't do it. But notice this. Haran starts his journey towards Canaan. And he stops halfway. This is partial obedience, by the way. Abram's going to follow suit. Haran becomes a place of settling instead of continuing on. And we see this all the time. We experience this all the time. People leave something behind. They start to move towards God and they settle halfway, because really following God can be uncomfortable. You've seen it. People start out, we call them Alka-Seltzer Christians, right? Plop, plop, fizz, fizz. But guess what happens? It fizzles out all the time. People say, I'm going to come to this Bible study, and they show up a couple weeks and then they make it, well, in that case, a 64th of the way. You know how many times people have said, hey, you should do this on Wednesday. Okay, we'll do it. And they come for a couple weeks and then they're gone. The very ones that really wanted it aren't here today. And then somebody will come, do a couple, and then they're out again. And that's just one example, because we could take that same idea and apply it all towards our whole entire spiritual walk with God. We start reading the Bible, right? The beginning, January 1st, we're all going to read the Bible every day. How many of us are doing that today? I'm going to pray every single day. And we get comfortable. We get halfway. And the enemy's hard at work with this too, because the enemy wants to throw every distraction, every obstacle, every slowdown he can at you. I'm going to come to church on Wednesday. Oh, you know, I worked hard today outside and I just need to take a break and stay home. Or I got so many chores to do at home. You know, the weather's turning. It's getting nicer. I got a lot to do. You start backing off. This is where people like to say, I've gotten out of the habit of going to church. First of all, church should have never been a habit. It's a lifestyle. It's like saying, did you get out of the habit of eating? Because church and the Word of God is spiritual food. So, don't settle halfway. Because partial obedience, it feels like progress, but it delays the purpose. Delays. How many of you guys can think back and go, I wish I would have started something a year ago, 2 years ago, 50 years ago? Yeah, doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. You fill in the time frame. The point is like, where are you at with that? But guess what? Today you can start. Just don't say that again in another 50 years. 25 years, 10 years, 5 years, 1 year, 1 week, whatever. So, partial obedience feels like progression. Feels like, yeah, we're going strong for God. But I came so far. Look at how far I've come. I don't care. You haven't reached the final purpose. You got to keep going. And then Abram will have to continue the journey his father did not finish. That's a strong real life pattern. Sometimes God is calling us to finish something what a previous generation started but didn't complete. One more side note. Sarai. Oh, this is going to be cool. You know what the meaning of Sarai means? The root is ruler or prince. The ending, ah, Sarah, so Sar, S-A-R, is ruler or prince. The A-I at the end is my. Her name literally means my princess. That's so cool. Now, here's what's even cooler. When God changes her name, we still got the same root, Sar, but instead of A-I, we got A-H. This means now princess, but not a princess to me like Sarah means, but now this is a universal, national, royal princess. And who is she, gang? She is the princess to Abram the father. The two are the king and princess of the covenant of the Hebrews. Pretty cool, huh? So as we close today, the question was, are you building your life, and this is building from last week, through systems you control, or walking in the line of God's establishing, walking in alignment with Him, walking in the line that He is establishing for you? Genesis chapter 11 answers it clearly. Babel builds a system and stops at self-made identity. But Shem will carry the true name forward. Abram then steps into a calling that he didn't create. He simply received. And God is not asking you to build something impressive. He's not asking us at this church to build something impressive. He's simply asking us to follow something eternal, and that is the calling of the Lord. That's why I say the greatest work you can do is to do what God has called you to do. Not a good work, a great work to fulfill His calling. So what do? Well, we stop trying to make your name and we step into what God has called us to do. That is Genesis 11. And how in the heck did we get that out of a bunch of names? All right, what kind of questions we got?